U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Friday afternoon, let's say the weekend here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline studio on this spring-like Friday afternoon somewhere in the world, just not here. Andrea Haines is in the studio from the Chicago Tribune, comes by on most Mondays. We will talk to Adam Ochstein as well about the jobless numbers and more coming up later in the program. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Spin that mic around a little closer to your face.
That close?
Yeah, you can move it around. So Elizabeth Warren today talked about breaking up Google, Facebook, Amazon. Now, it's an interesting thing politically because the Democrats are going to be the loudest voices in the Democratic Party are the most left. And so they, you know, the president today was talking about them as well. So it will be easy for them to run against them. But Warren is saying that it's time we look at Facebook, Google, and Amazon and maybe break them up. What do we make of that?
That's true. So she feels like these companies are just too big. You know, many people feel that way. They've just grown absolutely massive. And some people are worried that it's really anti-competitive, that they have so much power. They've snapped up other companies. And also that it's just bad for democracy because, again, they just are such gatekeepers of information. And, you know, they own it all.
Well, you know, and she makes a point in that these are companies that didn't really exist 25 years ago, and now they are monopolies in many ways. They do control it, and that's government steps in and breaks up monopolies. So maybe that is a way to look at it. She wants to create a category that she calls platform utilities. So look at them as utilities in a way, I guess, and Google would be one of those, Amazon as well. I don't know how popular. I don't know. What do you think? Will this be popular with voters or unpopular with voters?
You know, it's hard to say. I do think people have had it with tech companies, as we talk about every weekend, in terms of these giant monster companies where there's news every week about something going wrong with how they're running. So there may be some appetite for some way to control them. On the other hand, you know, some sweeping regulation isn't always popular
right.
with everyone either.
Okay, so there's that from the campaign trail. Let's go take a flight. United Airlines. This is one of those things where you're booked through on a flight, let's say United flight from, I don't care where, but you're ending up in Chicago, you've got a connection, and you land with just a sliver of time to make your connection into O'Hare. And I guess it happens more and more that the doors are just being closed on you right as you get close to the gate because the airlines are all about their on-time rating.
Exactly. They're obsessed with the on-time rating. And I feel like, you know, you used to feel like if you're connecting, especially if you're connecting on the same airline,
they might do you a solid,
like let you get on the plane if you're 30 seconds late.
How about that announcement when the plane lands? Okay, please remain seated so the people who are connecting can get off
first. Yeah, so they can run through the airport and attempt to make their connection. So yeah, as the emphasis on time ratings has gone up, they've just become more and more strict about it. So United is hoping that this new software, which will allow them to kind of figure out who's on the plane, who needs to connect, and what is the time schedule of those flights, you know, are those flights potentially ones that can make up any lost minute or two and everything will still be okay?
So if you're on a flight, so first of all, I can't believe they didn't know that I was on a flight that was connecting and they wouldn't know that it was late.
I know. Are we self-centered or do we just assume that by now even technology should be providing this information?
How could that software not exist if Andrea Haines is scheduled to be on this flight? She's connecting from Phoenix. She's not here. Oh, I see the flight is late. I would think that would be basic knowledge, but the airlines don't have that knowledge right now.
Yeah, this sounds like it will allow better coordination. And again, it takes it a step further because it's going to look at if we hold this for you, how will that impact down the line?
Right.
And that's more the problem because a few minutes here, a few minutes there, and pretty soon things are getting off kilter all over the place. So this is a little more sophisticated. It's going to let them know when it's possible, you know, and realistic to
I mean, it's not like you should text the gate and say, look, I'm going to stop for a Diet Coke. I'll be there quick. But right. So they're identifying flights where they can make up time in the air. And in those cases, if they know they've got people connecting, they might wait 5 or 10 more minutes.
Exactly. You know, there's always some elasticity, right? Like they'll be like, we're actually landing 20 minutes early. Then a few minutes later, they're telling you, no, we're 10 minutes late. Now we're 17 minutes early again. So there's some elasticity in the time frame. So they're hoping to better use that.
Industry-wide, the airline flights arrived on time. What would you guess? Well, you saw the story, 79%. I think that's pretty good. when you factor in weather and other things like that. But so American Airlines doesn't have a program like this, and they're really worried about it because they do have a bad on-time arrival number. So you're more likely to get the gate, the plane door shoved in your face there.
Yeah, right. People get mad if they don't get accommodated, but then they're also very, very mad if flights aren't on time. So it's a little bit of a balancing act. And everybody, of course, wants passengers to know that the flight will be on time, which I feel like, I don't know, I book on Orbitz and it's always like, how good is this flight? How on time is this flight? It actually gives you, as a consumer, that information. So I right. feel like you don't want to be dinged there either. And no one's going to book a flight that's only on time 60% of the time, right? You
know, I would if I knew it was 15 minutes late. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, 15 minutes late, that doesn't bother me at all. An hour or 90 minutes, that's a different thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe you won't be left behind at United Airlines anytime soon. And they're starting it in with San Francisco, right? Then they're going to spread it to everywhere eventually.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay. Uber is doing a big expansion here in Chicago. And it was an area that I did not know much about until I started doing the show, that Chicago is a real logistics hub. And Uber Freight knows that, and they're moving in.
Yeah, so this isn't the Uber that you and I may use on a daily basis, but this is their Uber Freight business, which connects truck drivers with shippers. So it's basically a business-to-business type of logistics arm of Uber. And as you said, Chicago is centrally located. We've always been a big hub for all kinds of transit, and that's still the case. We have some very big logistics companies here.
So if I have a company and I need a truck driver to take something to Tucson, I would use Uber Freight and they would hook me up with a truck driver.
You're in.
All right. So who are the people who are going to be working here?
So yeah, they're going to be hiring hundreds of employees. They already have 1,000 people in this area, of whom several hundred are with Uber Freight. And they're planning to double that and also increase their office space. So, yeah, they use all kinds of employees. It's really a variety. It's not, yeah.
I didn't realize that Chicago is Uber's number two city when it comes to the workforce, so that's pretty impressive.
That's true.
Okay, there's another story I want to talk to you about. I love this story about SimCity and how little kids were playing SimCity 10, 15, 20 years ago, and they grew up to be city planners.
I love this story, too. It's really a culture of technology story, and it's for those that grew up with technology. SimCity is 30 years old, so kids have been playing it for a long time. And the LA Times did this really interesting story about kids who grew up playing SimCity, where you get to organize cities and, you know, basically do a junior version of urban planning. And they literally did grow up to become urban planners.
Right. So I just have never been a computer game person. But SimCity, I remember one of my nephews playing SimCity all the time, where you just build your own, city, right?
Yeah, and it's funny because it's, you know, it's like zoning for fun,
right.
Building a street grid,
who knew there could be
infrastructure funding, all gamified.
I think it's funny, though, because the story goes into how realistic it is, but then they say, well, they don't really put parking lots in, or they don't have bike lanes, so it's not like it's really training software.
Yeah, and they're getting better at it, though. They do seem to be trying to include things that you know, we really have. It was overly simplified probably at the beginning, and they didn't have things like combination buildings that were maybe retail on the ground floor and apartments above. So there's some subtleties.
Right.
You know, now they're talking about getting bike lanes and other things that we deal with in the modern urban planning world.
But I think what you hit on is right, in that, you know, sometimes you say, oh, you guys, you're wasting your life. If you're playing these games, you shouldn't be doing this. It's the new world, and there are real benefits to it in many ways, and this was one, I guess. Hey, we got a minute, but I want to ask you, too, about the investigation into the security breach at the hospital with the Jussie Smollett case.
That was interesting, right? Yeah, so Northwestern dealt with some people, apparently. I believe the Sun-Times reported this yesterday, and apparently, you know, there were some nosing around in his medical records.
Looking at the records,
obviously, as we all know, that case was of extremely high interest. Everybody wanted to know what happened. People were no doubt trying to figure out if he was, in fact, injured, as he said he was. So, yeah.
We'll see where that goes. And I know the Chicago Police Department investigating itself as well with some leaks on that. Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune. Read more about these and other stories at chicagotribune.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:22 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. You're listening to 720 WGN Chicago. Steve Bertrand on this Friday afternoon. On a phone line now is Adam Ochstein, who is, of course, the founder and CEO of StratX. And Adam joins us from time to time. He's back to talk Big Ten basketball. Adam, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Big Ten basketball, we can talk about that all day.
Maryland's having a year this year, aren't they?
a little bit of a losing streak. Hopefully going to end it tonight against Minnesota, going to the Big Ten tournament next week with a little bit of momentum. But, well, yeah,
I love,
been a good year.
I love this time of year, and I just have to pay tribute right now. Bennett Wakenight, the producer, is a Loyola boy, so he went to Loyola, and they are in action right now taking on Valparaiso. Ryan Burrows from Valpo, so we got some nice office strategy going on. And really, Bennett hasn't heard a moment of the show so far today.
That's why he was so quick to get me on the phone with you.
That's right. He's watching TV. Okay, the jobs report comes out earlier today. They were expecting 180,000 jobs. Now, there was a monster month last week, 300,000, or last month. And then, really, the first time I heard it, when I heard 20,000 jobs created, I thought it must have been a mistake.
Yeah, I thought it was a typo. I thought they left a zero out. But, you know, obviously, monster month last month is probably some of it. I'm sure the weather last, you know, 6-8 weeks had something to do with it, as well as that shutdown that I think put a big hangover on the economy that maybe lasted like a month delay. But you're not going to create record jobs on a monthly basis forever. There's got to be a little bit of a slowdown, and I think we're starting to maybe see a little bit of cracks in the economic armor.
Well, tell me, but what the good news out of it, at least if you're an employee, maybe not employer, is that wages went up, and they went up more, I think, than they had in maybe a year and a half. I don't have the number in front of me, but there was a significant increase in wages year over year. Are you seeing that in the companies that you work with?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is, I think because the job economy, I mean, the job market is so tight, and people are getting jobs pretty quickly, and there's probably more jobs out there than people looking. Organizations are starting to realize that they need to pay up internally. Otherwise, their people are starting to get poached.
And tell me about poaching other companies. I mean, is it a good idea to bring in managers from the outside or recruit them from within? Or what do you look for if you're bringing someone in, like a manager from the outside?
Well, I think it's a combination. I think you need fresh blood from the outside to give a certain different perspective, because I think you can have some groupthink if you only promote from within. But obviously, promoting from within helps the culture from the sense that people are going to feel like there's opportunity for growth. You know, and in terms of the money factor, I hate to say this if I have my employees listening on the phone. home team discount by promoting from within. Because the job market, when you have to recruit from the outside, sometimes a little bit more expensive.
Right. So so two good points there. One is, if you're working your way up the ladder and you're just reaching for the next rung and you see your boss hire someone from outside, that's discouraging. So that's
very demotivating.
Yeah,
yep.
That's an argument against it. And the fact is that you can promote from inside, probably less expensive. Another argument against going outside, but as you said, the real, and I've seen this, I work at WGN Radio. I've been here for 35 years, and there was a time in the 80s when we all had been here for 20 years. And when you become that sort of cocooned, I think sometimes you're not open to or exposed to new ideas, and you can suffer for that.
Yeah, and that's why sometimes bringing in fresh blood will also, you know, A, it'll help everyone up their game a bit, because now there's a new guy coming in or gal coming in, and are they gonna be like the bright shining darling of the organization? You know, what do I have to do to make myself showcase further?
Right.
So there's some of that, but also you are getting fresh new ideas and perspectives.
All right.
Obviously, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, some of the downsides from the outside is, you know, I'll make the analogy when, you know, I first started dating and courting my wife, you know, the toilet seat was always put back down. You know, there was never a laundry pile. The dishes were always put away. You know, you get complacent when, once you're there a while. So when you come in from the outside, you don't really know what you have. And people are going to be on their best behavior until, like, maybe a couple months in, then you know what you have.
So what you're describing then is a risk. If you bring someone in from the outside, everything looks great at the beginning, but you might not be getting the real picture.
Yeah, fear of the unknown, right? And you know what you have, obviously, when you have someone internal. Sometimes that there's some blind spots there because, A, this person might be, you know, walk on water, they're the best thing ever, and there are no blind spots, so you don't see their bad traits. Conversely, sometimes you only focus on the negative things on people that are in front of you a while, and you don't see the attributes that you take for granted.
Right, and there's the whole idea, too, of as the employer having a little bit of responsibility or duty to grow the employees, to give them challenges and to give them other opportunities.
Yeah, and sometimes you need to, you know, you need to leave home to do that, right? Sometimes you need to leave the mother's nest and go get a job elsewhere. I mean, we have a couple examples of people who left the organization and came back.
Ah.
And, you know, that degree of that whole boomerang is great for the culture as well, because it shows that the grass isn't always greener on the other side. And sometimes they gain good experience coming back, and they can bring some of those fresh ideas back with them.
All right, so StratEx works with primarily the restaurant industry, right, when it comes to human resources?
Yeah.
And so I was reading this article in Forbes about the need for IT work when it comes to human resources and sort of the conflict, because we're kind of talking about this. So if you're going to hire someone, you need to get to know them, and machines don't always help you get to know them so well.
Yeah, and you know, so there's a strange kind of marriage, because typically IT folks are, you know, stereotypically
right.
Introverted, and HR folks are stereotypically extroverted. So there's a strange bedfellows there, and HR now is all about, you know, technology with recruiting. So, you know, I need to get these job recs out there. I need to automate the process.
Do you think there are good hires being not hired because they're being weaned out by technology? I mean, it seems to me like people are being missed because they might answer a question incorrectly on an automated application process.
I hope not. Hopefully, and from what I've seen, Steve, is most of the technology is really out there to speed up the manual process. I don't think there's been a lot of really good use cases for AI yet.
Okay.
You know, artificial intelligence, right, where right. I can automate this, you know, this person's answer this question right or wrong. I think it's more of, rather than fill out a paper application, how do I streamline the process to get all that data I need to have someone actually tell me they're interested.
Adam Ockstein is the founder and CEO of StratEx. Adam, nice to talk to you. Good luck at the Big Ten tournament.
Fear the turtle. Thanks, Dave.
Fear the turtle. Who doesn't? Thanks very much, David Jennings. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank in the Allstate Skyline studio on this Friday afternoon. All right, Maria LaMagna is on the phone line. She writes for MarketWatch and is one of my favorite guests in the world. Maria, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you. That's so nice. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, so I do love talking to you because you seem to find these interesting sort of topics or areas when it comes to finance or economics for us. And one of the things you've been writing about lately has been this FIRE movement, right? The Financial Independent Retire Early. Is that what it stands for?
Exactly. Yeah, it's gaining a lot of popularity.
Well, I mean, everyone would love to do it. I don't know how possible it is, right? The idea is that you save a lot of money early and then just kick back and retire. I mean, is there a magic trick to this?
Yeah, so basically people are trying to do this. When they say early, they mean very early, you know, retiring in their 30s or sometimes their 40s, and really just living off of the savings that they have. So a lot of time it requires living really frugally, ideally making a lot of money and just not using it, and then being able to save it all up and never have to work again.
That's like, it reminds me of a Steve Martin joke from the 1970s about how to be a millionaire and never pay taxes. He says, first, get $1 million. I mean, how do you accumulate that money at that young of an age?
No, that's so true. And I think that's, you know, part of why a lot of people who are interested in the movement either have criticisms of it or, you know, can't relate to it, because they do say, you know, if you don't have a high paying job, how can you possibly get to that point, especially as healthcare is so expensive and different things can definitely come up in your future where you'll need to have a huge nest egg saved.
Is this one of the things that a lot of people are talking about but aren't really doing? I mean, that maybe it doesn't exist. It's not as big as we think it might be?
Yeah, I'm actually looking into that right now, because it's hard to quantify how many people are actually retired. And, you know, it does seem to be, there are a lot of online forums and different places where people are talking about this, but it does seem like something most people are aspiring to at this point, and very few people have actually done. So, but, you know, I think it's a good thing that it's getting the conversation going about retirement, especially for people who are really young.
That's an excellent point.
Instead of just yeah, just putting it off. I think it's always a good thing if we're putting our focus on saving more and not making retirement seem like an old, dusty thing to worry about. You know, it's something that you kind of do have to think about even as early as your 20s.
And so the reason then you're here is because of an article you wrote, I think it was last week, talking about Barista Fire, which just cracked me up. But it's so people who want to follow the FIRE movement, they want to sort of semi-retire, but they can't. And so I think it was a Reddit line or a conversation about people just easing out, like when they're in their 30s or 40s, right?
Exactly. So I had never heard of that term, but I guess it has gone back a few years, Barista Fire, where people basically say you don't have to retire completely and never work again. You could maybe, you know, so-called retire from your full-time job and then take on maybe a part-time job. You know, of course, you'll have to worry about what you're going to do for health insurance. Maybe you have a spouse who is employed full-time.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of, there's some criticisms of whether that can really be called retirement, but it's basically the idea that you can leave your full-time job, but maybe transition to something a little more flexible.
Which is, I think, what a lot of us older people are facing when we retire. I mean, a lot of people, they don't retire altogether, but there's a line from one of the people who wrote on Reddit, which I love. Barista Fire is retiring early, but making your spouse work.
Right, exactly. I think you definitely have to interview the spouses in these situations because they hopefully feel as positively about it as their spouse who's not working.
You know, I love them in those conversations with other couples, and one of them says, yeah, I'm semi-retired, and the other one rolls his or her eyes because I think that happens more and more. Hey, before we go, though, we got a couple minutes. You wrote another piece about women, it's International Women's Day, of course, who manage the household money or the long-term finances. The headline says, rich women say they don't manage their money, their spouses do. And this was a worldwide study, so it varies greatly country to country, but tell me about this.
Yes, it does. It was a study by UBS. They interviewed almost 4,000 women in countries including the U.S., the U.K., Brazil, Germany, Hong Kong, Italy, Mexico, and a few others. So they wanted to find out if women who have high net worths are actually managing the money themselves. And what they found was overall, women are more involved in the day-to-day planning, but they're not involved in the longer-term planning like retirement and investing. So in some countries, it was a little more 50-50, but in many countries, it was predominantly the men in the relationships that were handling that.
In Singapore, 72%, it looks like, of the men handle it. But in the U.S., well, let's start with Mexico, because Mexico is interesting to me. 61% of the households, or the women say, in Mexico, 61% say it's the women who do the long-term investing, not the men.
Yeah, exactly. And Brazil was kind of close behind. That wasn't so surprising to me. Those societies tend to have a strong matriarchy, so that was, you know, not as surprising. But, they did say that the women are handling all the finances, including the longer-term planning.
And in the U.S., 54%, it's closer in the U.S., but a majority of women still are doing it in long-term investing in the U.S., right?
Right. So in the U.S., 54% of women said their spouse handles it. So, yeah, it's close to 50-50, and that's also changing over time. I think a lot of the women who don't do it tend to be a little bit older, they showed in the survey, and women who are younger are actually more involved. So it is changing over time that women are actually being, you know, considered equal partners in the long-term financial decisions.
You know, I'm trying to figure out what happens in my house, and I think I probably pay attention to it more than my wife does, so maybe I would be driving that, and she certainly does the day-to-day finances. So it's a caveat or a warning to women that if your spouse dies, and they usually do first, you know, if you're not paying attention to it, you'll need to know that. But just the converse is true as well. If you're paying attention to retirement but don't know how to pay the Comcast bill, if you're the guy, you could be in the same situation or in just as much trouble.
Totally. That was kind of what the survey brought up. Yeah, the case of death or divorce. It's just a good idea for both partners to know what's going on both daily and in the longer term.
I guess that's the point, really. It's not the right answer is that both partners are involved and know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Maria, it was great to talk to you again. I love reading what you're writing at MarketWatch.com, and I look forward to the next time.
Thanks so much. Me, too.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Health and tech are growing hand in hand these days, and big hospitals are embracing it. Northwestern Medicine just announced that they're partnering with a San Francisco startup called Eco, and they focus on a cardiac monitoring device. Think of it as like a super high-tech stethoscope to pick up little blips and bloops that doctors' ears may not be able to hear. These are important developments that the industry needs to keep building upon, because literally, everybody will benefit from this. Your doctor can do a better job, you learn important things about your body, everyone's happy. And Coyote Logistics is happy since they announced that they're opening an office in Detroit Rock City. The third-party logistics company will bring 500 jobs to the Motor City and jump in a 58,000-square-foot space in the Corktown neighborhood. It's an interesting move to make Detroit its next hub, as many companies these days are seemingly picking cities based on what they can do for the company. But Coyote sees Detroit as a growing tech hub, and they're looking to establish themselves before it really blows up. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Our number of the week on this Friday afternoon is 48, as in 48%. You know, marijuana has become legal in more places, but sports leagues, the NHL, NFL, and Major League Baseball, have pretty much done nothing to change their drug policies. The NHL is one exception. Hockey players now are essentially no longer punished for testing positive for THC. And that's perhaps because in 48% of NHL cities now, there are laws allowing recreational marijuana. Well, 52, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. All right, Chicago, one of the big acquisitions out of Chicago Tech last year was SpringCM, was purchased by DocuSign. DocuSign now moving into the city, into those offices. And on the phone line now is Eric Severinghouse, an assistant vice president for solutions integrators and global partner solutions at DocuSign. Eric, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Now, tell me, are you originally DocuSign, or are you originally SpringCM, or what's your origination here?
I am part of the legacy DocuSign team. Okay. The legacy SpringCM team. So I joined SpringCM about 2 years ago when we raised a new round of capital and we brought in some new leadership to accelerate growth. And it went better than expected, frankly, which culminated in our merger with DocuSign that we consummated towards the end of last year.
Was a merger or an acquisition always the goal?
Well, you know, when you're building a tech company that's growing as fast as we are, you're always looking at a variety of different options. And so we were always kind of keeping our eye on the IPO potential. And that was certainly out there.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, we were looking for different partners that we thought could help us accelerate the way that we went to market. And as we got to know DocuSign better over the last year and a half, 2 years, what we realized is that there was really a perfect fit for how we could combine the different organizations, the different technologies and financial resources to go realize really a joint vision that we had developed in isolation from one another. But ultimately, when it came together, it was a really powerful thing.
Well, how is it that the two products fit together?
So we've been partnering with DocuSign for years. SpringCM is focused on contract management. So we help organizations, businesses, nonprofits, government entities. They're trying to get contracts through complex approval processes and things of that nature. DocuSign, obviously the world leader in e-signature. And so when we get to the end of a contract process, there's always that kind of e-signature component, and so we've been working with DocuSign for a long time. What we came to realize is DocuSign's vision was much bigger and much broader, and this is what got us very excited, around how we can modernize the way organizations come to agreement, and this whole idea of what we're calling the rise of the modern system of agreement. And so the idea behind this is, you know, companies and organizations have spent a lot of money modernizing to take their infrastructure to the cloud and to modernize with partners like Salesforce and a variety of others. But they need to modernize the way companies come to agreement with one another, and that's really where we come in, with a combination of Spring's document and workflow technology, as well as DocuSign's e-signature technology.
You mentioned Salesforce, and I mentioned in the beginning that more and more West Coast companies are, if not establishing, expanding their footprint here. Uber Freight, they're hiring hundreds here.
Absolutely.
You were in Chicago before DocuSign's made the acquisition. Tell me about the climate, though. Do you see more West coming to the Midwest? And one, does it matter? And two, if it is happening, why is it happening?
Oh, we're seeing it in droves, and it absolutely does. It does make a huge difference. With DocuSign, you know, the biggest driver of what they were focused on was obviously the technology and the culture fit between the organizations. But DocuSign was founded in Seattle, and their headquarters, our headquarters, is now in San Francisco. One of the things that they realized is that having the two primary hubs of the company be solely on the West Coast makes it tougher to do business, you know, all across the country. And so expanding out of the West Coast and eastward had been a stated goal of DocuSign before this merger even took place. That was a function of technology talent, the availability of technology and sales talent, the cost of things like real estate and infrastructure, but even more importantly, the desire to service customers in the Midwest and on the East Coast. So, and so, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so Eric, then what is happening now with DocuSign? They're moving into the offices, into your offices, and they're rebranding. Will SpringCM go away as a name, or will DocuSign bring more employees into Chicago, or what's going to change here?
The SpringCM brand remains strong as ever. One of the nice things about being bought by a Silicon Valley company is we get, we already got the snacks and we got free drinks and all kinds of stuff being brought in.
Right, right.
Got a facelift on the offices, so we got a beautiful, we're in the same space, and in fact, we just took a second floor, doubling our footprint at 180 North LaSalle. DocuSign and Spring will continue to be hiring more employees as we move forward into the future. And DocuSign, we have really sort of stated SpringCM as kind of our third headquarters in the country as the center of gravity and the point of growth for us as an organization.
Eric Severinghaus from DocuSign. Eric, it was great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Hey, likewise. Thank you so much.